What's your opinion?
This is It's Debatable.
Hello and welcome to It's Debatable on Campus FM 103.7, where every week students of international relations at the University of Malta discuss contemporary international affairs. I am Alex Bencini, and I'll be your host for today's programme. Our topic today deals with the topic of men in power. To begin the show, I'd like to welcome our academic guest for today.
Today, our guest is Dr. Elena Dalli, lecturer at the University of Malta. Dr. Dalli, how would you consider the relevance of men across historical perspective in the world of politics?
Well, we can say that the world of politics has been in the hands of men by and large over the ages. There have been women, like in the recent past, such as Margaret Thatcher, for instance, who were powerful women leaders, but we have to understand that these women, such as Margaret Thatcher or maybe even Indira Gandhi, for instance, they entered politics in the structures made by men. And so the way they operated in politics was very similar to the ways in which men operate. So that is a disadvantage for women, because when we make this argument about which you are making as well, how politics has been dominated mainly by men, they tell us, but there was Margaret Thatcher, there was Indira Gandhi, for instance. But these women did not change the structures, the political structures, which would make politics attractive to women as well. In fact, they used the same tactics of hard power. In fact, Margaret Thatcher went to war as well, while the argument is that if there are more women in politics, maybe we will start looking at smarter power, not hard power, but smart power, where we try to reconcile, where you try to solve problems not by going to war, for instance. This is just an example. So it remains, the realm, politics remains the realm of man, because even when there were women at the higher levels of politics, they did not change the way that politics is done, which would make it more attractive to women.
Will be there no chance if more women enter into politics?
Yes, that is the idea. But in order to change the systems in which we make politics, there has to be a critical mass of women involved in order to change things. Okay, so that is the first hurdle which we have to overcome. First, we have to put our message across that we need to have both women and men in politics and at decision-making levels, because the world is made up of women and men and not of just men or of just women. So once we understand that, And we start changing the structures of politics and the way we do politics, then we will probably have more women who will be participating in the political exercise, and we will have, I think, better decisions, better politics. In fact, many people started saying after the recent economic crisis, which we have to say up to now, the economic, the political institutions were mainly in the hands of men. And so now they started looking at other ways of doing politics and economics as well. And they are saying, listen, maybe we should look more at the way women do politics and do economics. And this is the argument which I mentioned before, between hard power and soft power, and combining both and then thus working with smart power.
Perfect. How would you consider now, so the feminist movement, shifting now to the more an academics field, how would you consider now the role of the feminist group and the feminist scholars, you know, that are emerging as a new political school of thought, basically?
Yes, I think there is still a lot to be done, and there is a need for this. In fact, we are talking about feminist politics, even at local level, even in Malta, for instance. You hear the leader of the opposition recently said, "I want to have a feminist party," in the sense that he wants the Labour Party to be a feminist party, but meaning that we must involve everyone. We must involve women more in politics so that we can offer better solutions from the feminist perspective for this country. Okay, so the more ideas you have, the more people you involve, people who have hitherto been sidelined. Okay, we want to use these resources use them for the benefit of the country, for the benefit of the population. So the more the research there is on these ideas, on these concepts, on how we can involve, on the impact of more women being involved at decision-making levels, on the impact that will have on policies, on how we will be living our lives, on how we are organizing our institutions. From this feminist perspective, we've had the male perspective for hundreds of years, so it will be good for society, for countries, for the world to involve and observe more and use more the feminist perspective, which up to now we haven't been using enough.
Unfortunately, this is all the time that we have. But I would like sincerely to thank you, Dr. Elena Dalli, for her enormous and incredible contribution to our program.
Thank you for providing us with such a well-rounded and interesting introduction to the topic. The show now turns to our students, and I'm joined in the studio with Michelle Panuncio and Bernadette Kakia. Bernadette, to begin the show, I'll start the first question with you. What exactly is implied by the term men in power?
Men in power do not merely imply that men are simply seeking to attain political power. Within the wider dimension, for its meaning, it implies that men are seeking to realize the wider social meaningful objectives in view of their own respective talents, skills, abilities, and interests. Every citizen desires to become a more effective social actor. However, not all citizens are effectively attaining this particular goal.
Our social and political culture is based on democratic values. Do men in power appreciate democracy, or do they seek to always be dominant and assertive?
Men in power have different approaches to society in general and to power itself. However, most men who have succeeded in life have lately adopted a democratic approach in handling their subordinates. I believe there is limited space within our present social context as regards to the adoption of an autocratic style.
Your perspective is quite comforting, I must say. However, there are different types of democratic styles to be adopted in management, are there?
Definitely. It is useless to generalize. Males acquire their own management skills for their own practical life experience and also by following practical courses. However, I believe that experience is the best guide in this respect as regards the mastery of effective and efficient management skills.
What are the common qualities of male leadership traits?
Leadership is apparent within different spheres of life, ranging from the military to the more commercial sector. However, male leaders endorse a number of common characteristics. These include intelligence, self-confidence, determination to succeed, personal integrity, as well as sociability. The latter translates into effective personal communication skills. Whenever these qualities are lacking, these are going to impact unfavorably the overall quality of the leadership.
However, are there any other qualities which are apparent in leadership?
Without doubt, there are other important yet complementary qualities to the ones which had been highlighted. These include drive, motivation, insight, initiative, tolerance to the perspective of others, and the ability to influence in both a subtle and indirect manner one's subordinates. I believe that an effective leader must value to a very high degree cooperativeness, even when he is time-tied.
I notice that men in power tend to be highly flexible in their approaches, in the sense that they tend to fine-tune their tactics according to the particular situational context under review. Do you agree with this particular perspective?
What you are saying is technically referred to as adjustment. It is a technique whereby leaders adopt distinct approaches towards individuals according to the particular situational context. I believe that in view of my own personal experience, female leaders are less able to adjust, but successful female leaders have full mastery of all the leadership skills. Leadership skills need to be assessed as a package.
Do men seek to be in power due to greed, short-sightedness, or perhaps even the presence of social opportunities?
I would rather say it is a combination of all of these factors. However, one has also to include ambition. Ambition is healthy, but too much ambition is counterproductive. Take the case of the Libyan leader Colonel Gaddafi in Libya, Saddam Hussein in Iraq, and Adolf Hitler in Germany.
So do men desire to be empowered by their own nature? Or do they prefer being empowered?
Oh, one must not generalize about this particular highly sensitive issue. Certain men are leaders by nature, like Gandhi in India, Winston Churchill in the UK, Martin Luther King in the United States. They not only desire power for its own sake and to meet their own personal interests, they likewise employed the power they withheld for the constructive interest of their own citizens. On these particular grounds, these leaders need to be fully admired, since a leader is there to grant service to his or her respective society.
Men, by tradition, have always enjoyed a special and exclusive degree of power. Could you perhaps shed some light in what particular way this is so?
The political elite in the past, within practically all the societies worldwide, were directly dominated by men, and in most cases, political power was attained on a hereditary basis. This system ensured that men would remain in power for an indefinite period. Even when economic developments were carried out, thanks to industrialization, male entrepreneurs dominated the economic spectrum. It was only during the early decades of the 20th century, when the feminist movements within both USA and UK, in particular the suffragists, started militating against the authorities of the state so as to secure their own interests.
Do you account for the political and socio-cultural empowerment of women in Malta as being a direct result of the feminist movement?
The feminist movement has certainly helped to bring forward the rights of women in Malta. However, it is imperative to stress that although women are gaining new rights and a new social dignity, this does not imply that these are at the expense of their male counterparts. I believe that society, to be stable and to be progressive, must seek to recognize the respective rights of all its members, irrespective of their own gender. By recognizing these differences between the genders, there will be greater constructive space for mutual and reciprocal collaboration.
You mentioned the term, the competitive social tug of war between men and male and females. One sec. Where do you mention that?
Hmm.
Luca, pause for one sec.
That doesn't mean that it is like metaphor, you know? It is like a... male and female, uh-huh. That's why there's a tug of war between...
Okay, so we can just really start with a question. We can say, uh-huh, do you think there's a tug of war? Do you think this tug of war is of a detriment to both genders or to a particular gender group? Yeah, that's fine as a question.
Okay, Luca.
He's just recording it.
Okay.
Do you think this tug of war is of a detriment to both genders or to a particularly gender group?
This tug of war between males and females has been constantly going along throughout the different phases of human history. However, lately, in view of particular social changes, this conflict has intensified, and in some respects, women are proving to be highly resilient. This is particularly the case as regards tertiary university. In general, within the European Union, females have been more successful in relation to their male counterparts as regards the effective acquisition of tertiary education. This is also the case within the Maltese context. However, within certain scientific-oriented courses, such as electrical and mechanical engineering, there is a high degree of male dominance.
Unfortunately, I'm going to have to stop you both there, as we're going to have to take a short break. Please stay tuned and listen to the smooth sounds as the debate will continue here on It's Debatable Campus FM 103.7.
Take me now, baby, here as I am. Pull me close and try and understand. Desire is hunger, is the fire I breathe. Love is a banquet on which we feed.
Welcome back to our program. Today, our special guest is Dr. Emmy Bezzina. Do you think that still today men have an important role in politics?
Definitely. Though there are these movements purporting to emphasize gender equality and movements which are advocating that women should be more involved in high-placed posts, and also that parliaments should have a quota of women in them. The basic reply is that in making these assertions, we are actually positively discriminating. In other words, those who are capable of advancing and obtaining a post in their particular and personal careers should do so without this demarcation line of men and women. In our time, naturally, men are playing the leading roles in politics. Let us mention, for example, Obama in the United States and the fierce battle he had with Hillary Clinton. Well, he got the better of Hillary Clinton, not out of some discrimination, but because the American public thought that Obama was a better candidate overall than Hillary Clinton. In the U.S. presidential election we are about to have this November, no women featured this time, whereas in the last presidential campaign, we had clearly Hillary Clinton on the Democrat side and Sarah Palin on the Republican side. This time round, no woman or women featured prominently. This is not because of positive discrimination, but because the situation being what it is, women themselves felt that their own gender in a particular race like this were not suitable to fight the overall battles ahead. Similarly, in world politics, we have Putin in Russia. Does anyone ever hear of any feminine name going right to the top in Russian politics? The only significant women personalities that we had in politics is indeed within Europe, where in Germany we have the Chancellor Angela Merkel, and in Scandinavian countries, particularly Sweden and Norway and Denmark and even Holland, women, yes, there do play a role. And again, it is not because of gender discrimination, but because these women who contest these roles are themselves adapting to be able to live the difficult life of men in politics and persons in influential situations. In Malta, we have every pride to say that we had a woman president, the late Honorable Agata Barbara, who was also the first woman minister. But for those who knew her personally, as I did, she was a woman of guts. She was a woman who could fight any political or real adversary that came her way, in her own way, which not necessarily one tallied with, but she could face and stand up to, and indeed she did, advance into the top political post in Malta. Again, we can mention Mabel Strickland, who played a crucial role, not only through the influence of her father, who himself was a prime minister, Lord Strickland, but in her own way, and it was her personality that made the leading English newspaper in Malta, Today, The Times and Sunday Times, the huge manipulators of opinion that indeed they are. However, I do think that overall we cannot deny the basic truth that the picture in world politics and in influential positions is that 90% plus are for men, and the 9% plus are for women. That's and that is not because of discrimination, but because nature and cultural circumstances made woman what she is.
Dr. Bezzina, this is unfortunately all the time that we have for today, but I would like really to express my gratitude for having sharing with us your opinions and your ideas.
Welcome back to It's Debatable. I am joined in the studio with Michelle Panuncio and Bernadette Cacchia, both second-year international relations students here at the University of Malta, and both discussing the topic of men in power. Michelle, let's continue the topic with you. What do you think about the position of males in the foreseeable future?
Alexander, there are certain categories of men that are ambitious, and most of them are in a vantage position to dedicate wholeheartedly their life following a profession of their choice without being directly committed by their family pursuits. Certain men go beyond the limit and seek to undertake dual responsibilities, such as following a business profession, and likewise venturing within the political sphere. Certain males, in fact, are able to live up to the social and professional challenges which they periodically face. Others boldly venture to face challenges, since they perceive particular opportunities within these specific situations. This explains the profusion of men within politics and science and within the wider ambit of entrepreneurship. This includes business and risk-taking.
Do all males perceive their own personal social mobility as being highly important?
There are males who are highly ambitious, while others are less ambitious. There are males who are professionally orientated, while others are family orientated. Another category of males is completely indifferent. However, one can know that in view of the growth of education standards, particularly at the tertiary level, as well as the highly competitive nature within the job market, males are becoming highly professional orientated, follow different education pursuit.
It has been asserted that women tend to mature before their male counterpart. Is this factor of maturity granted a competitive advantage to females?
It depends on the specific case under review, since maturity and ambition are two factors which are both distinct from each other, I think.
All right, fair enough. Within many developing countries, such as the majority of the Muslim states, there is still a male-oriented and male-dominated socio-political system. Do you agree with this, Bernadette?
One must be cautious not to generalize, since there are many countries which are Muslims worldwide, and all of them interpret the teachings of the Quran and the role of men within them in a slightly differentiated manner. For instance, within Saudi Arabia and Libya, which are both Arab and Muslim states, the position of the male counterpart is somewhat different. In Libya, women enjoy a certain moderate degree of rights in comparison to many Western countries. However, the society is still male-orientated. within this conservative kingdom of Saudi Arabia, women only enjoy marginal rights, and the same situation is also apparent within the fundamentalist Islamic Republic of Iran. Other Muslim states, such as Turkey, Morocco, and Tunisia, still respect the majority of Muslim traditions. They are essentially male-dominated, but women are gaining more political and social rights. In general, Muslim states are all male-oriented. However, there are fundamental intra- and inter-regional distinctions. While some Muslim states are moderate, others are relatively fundamentalist.
How far do you consider the male-dominated system within Muslim countries as being fair? Is it leading to further social discrimination?
Well, from a Western point of view, whenever a society is male-dominated, it is essentially a case of social discrimination. However, it is important to note that the Muslim countries are male-dominated on the basis of custom and directly influenced by religious values. One cannot imagine such systems to change within a relatively short period. One expects important evolutions following the lines of modernity. In this process, both male and men and women will have a redefinition of their own respective dignity, rights, and duties. Apart from the Muslim world, the situation within the third world countries, which are particularly a third of the world's countries, is highly critical. These tend to be excessively male-dominated, and there is a high degree of lawlessness within them, where male suppresses the women for personal gain, driving her into prostitution and into the slave trade. Moreover, there are a number of foreign agents who are collaborating with certain local groups in this process.
Do you think governments are promoting more the status of men or the status of women?
I believe that world governments need to work actively so as to address gender-related problems in an urgent manner. Moreover, they need to adopt a highly fair approach in tackling gender issues, since most governments, particularly within the less developing countries, as well as within the third world, tend to grant an exceedingly high importance to the interests of men in relation to the interests of females.
Finally, I point the last question to you, Michelle. What attracts you as to regards the subject of men in power?
Well, Alexander, this is a very good question, because the subject under review for me is highly inspiring. However, to create a balance within society, we need to enhance the participation of both males and females. This will ensure a high degree of democratic stability, and in the long run, society will move along in a highly sustainable manner to attain higher goals and accomplishments. At the end of the day, this is what is desired, after all, I believe.
Unfortunately, that is all the time we have for today. Michelle Panuzio and Bernadette Carquilla, I'd like to thank you both. On behalf of all the team behind It's Debatable and the Department of International Relations at the University of Malta, I'm Alex Bencini. Thank you for tuning in to Campus FM 103.7.
You have just had the pleasure of listening to another student-run episode of It's Debatable, produced by the Department of International Relations within the Faculty of Arts at the University of Malta. For more information, kindly visit mirsa.org.mt. Tune in next week, same time, same frequency.